So they are separate living entities. Having established that, then we understand that they are simultaneously one and different. Right? Once you've established that they're eternal, they're under God's laws, and they're different living entities than Krishna, then you can establish their oneness and difference. Right? Does that make sense? So all that can be done nicely because you know that in establishing oneness, they still remain as separate entities. Right? And the difference, it still means there's a common ground. Right? So these function simultaneously. Does that make sense? Like that. Because all these are the views of the Vaishnava Acharyas. So it's there. You know, Ramanuja, what is it called? Like Vishnu Swami. Like that, they will bring out the oneness. Like that. Even Nimbarka, oneness. Then the difference in Madhva and Nimbarka. Right? And then the simultaneous oneness and difference, then, you know, then Baladev. So all of these will be brought out. So they're all correct. It's just a matter of what you're emphasizing. What's the prominent element of that? The commonness of the... of what it is that makes the relationship or the difference, therefore you are serving and everything like that. Does that make sense? As an impetus, means you can start off with that the oneness or the commonality between the Lord and the living entity. Therefore, based on that commonality, you have relationship. Right? Or you can take the difference that the living entity is different from the Lord. He's the eternal servant of the Lord, so therefore naturally he would serve the Lord. Right? Or the simultaneous one and difference, that there is the oneness and that there's the commonality, at the same time there's the difference, therefore then one can, one would be acting within that oneness, but that oneness can, that action can appear as a difference. Does this make sense? It means in Vaikuntha, the oneness and the difference are going to end up in the same result. One's going to be a little sweeter, one's going to be a little more formal. So it's just a matter of how formal or how sweet is dealing with the rules and regulations. You know what I'm saying? Rules and regulations are there. Therefore, you know, being the Lord's servant, following that, then we will please the Lord. Right? The other then is because of the commonality between the jiva and the Lord, that is the impetus. So there'll be a little bit more sweetness in the, in that service attitude within awe and reverence. Does that make sense? You know, so it's the same within. But then a chintabhedaveda tattva, then that will make it so that one, these both are there, so they're impetus, but at the same time, one could be doing something that seemingly is not favorable. Right? Like we were reading before, it was discussing the element of man. So the anger, the devotee is seemingly upset with Krishna. Right? So that's then a contradictory element. But that's emphasizing the difference. At the same time, it's also emphasizing the oneness. Otherwise, if there's not a common point, why would you be angry? You know what I'm saying? You're sitting here, and someone else, you know, drove their truck off the road in, you know, Namibia, something. Does it bother you? No, because there's no common element. Right? You're sitting in one place and somebody else decides they're going to sit in the same place. That will bother you. You know what I'm saying? Right? So where there's a commonality, then there can be this. So it's another manifestation of the commonality and the difference. They're both inspiration for service. But the point that comes up is that this inspiration for service then doesn't appear in its normal form. It's not just obviously on reverence or servitorship. Does that make sense? Like that. It has other elements that are there. The cowherd boys are servants of the Lord and see, you know, their dependency upon the Lord. At the same time, they're telling him, you know, you lost, you know, in the game, and so now you have to carry me on your shoulders. You know what I'm saying? Our mother Yashoda, she's this Lord's servant, but she's taking care of him like a son. So without her, then he will die. You understand? So it's hard to get these in these other forms. Does that make sense? like that. So that's why Chinta Beta Beta Tattva is important. Right? So now you understand where that principle in moms comes from. Like that. That's why moms can't understand how their son can come to the Gurukul and actually survive without them. Because right? Mother Jashoda, she can't understand that. So that means then she being the, you know, archetypical mom, then all other moms are like that. You know what I'm saying? Okay? And so then, having established that, then basis of relationship, now you deal with now what's going to be expressed in this relationship, right? We've shown that the relationship based on there's God and there's a living entity that follows laws God. He's eternal, and that's eternally the relationship. Then the next stage is then they are separate living entities, and in this separateness, then you have the element of oneness and difference. So the oneness is not in that their form merges, is that the position means the interest is common, right? Or the difference means maybe common interest, but you're in a different position, so therefore you serve, right? Just one is looking at same, one is looking at difference, though they're both there, but they're only emphasizing one or the other, right? And then you have, or all three. Then having established that, now how the relationship works, what is the relationship, then it's a matter of, okay, then there's going to be the living entity is situated in knowledge and love. So what does knowledge represent here?
Difference?
No, I'm just saying, we've discussed Sambandha Gyan in these first things. Right? So now we're coming to the next definitions, and they're bringing out the constitutional nature. The characteristic is knowledge, transcendental knowledge, and love. So what would that represent?
Masculine and feminine principle.
That's there, yes. But then this is, we're looking at a bigger...
Abhideya
and Prayojana. You understand? So Sambandha's been established, right, by actually who the living entity is. And now Abhideya and Prayojana. Because always remember, action is always carried out with knowledge as part of the chit potency. So knowledge can be within the area of Sambandha, because it's Sambandha Gyan, or knowledge about it, so that's what's been given before. But then action is also with knowledge, because action means you use the senses, right? And so the senses are powered by knowledge, right? Does that make sense? You know, your iPod works on electricity, so Abhideya works on knowledge. Does that make sense? So through knowledge you understand the relationships, through knowledge you know how to operate the relationship, right? Then from that is going to come some variety of result, some experience. So in here the natural position is that of love. So when that love is directed at Krishna, everything goes nicely. When it's not directed at Krishna, it's directed at the material energy, then that's the source of misery, right? Because in the material world, any nice thing always gives misery, right? So nice we can relate to, right? Ananda means happiness. So even though the happiness in the material world is so minuscule, but because it's happiness, we can relate to it. Does that make sense? And, you know, just by the standards you adjust, you know, it's like saying, it's like you're applying the curve, right? So it's something that's always been going on. You know the curve? Use a curve, at least that's what the American call it. I don't know what the new fancy terms are, but the curve is okay, you run a test in the class. See, there's two systems you can do. One is so much percentage, you get this to grade. Right? And so that works nice if you have good teachers, good students, good material, and everything like that. So let's say, you know, it means 90% you get a top mark, 80% next mark, and 70% next, like this, you kind of have let down. So then naturally people would fall within that according to how well they've studied and their ability. But sometimes, because in the modern thing, the teaching methods aren't necessarily so great, the students definitely don't want to learn. The teaching material is always experimental because they can't figure out why no one wants to learn, so they're always trying to keep up with it. But right, it takes 20 years to actually get a curriculum in place, and in 20 years you've gone through two generations, so the mentality of the kids have already changed twice, so you're already two generations behind in whatever you write. So it's always going to be experimental. So maybe it would have worked for the generation you wrote it for, but it's not going to work for the generation that's going to use it now. Does that make sense? So then they come up with this thing, it's called the curve. So they take the test, and let's say the highest mark was 50%. You know, curve is used when everybody's grouped together, so it's all in 50, 40, 30, like that, as it should have been in 90, 80, 70. So then what they do is they drop, you know, the top mark down to the 50, and the next mark down to the 40, and like that. So they just take what's there, the natural means the curve of the marks, and then they adjust the grade on there. Understand? So we can see it's not based on the standard of authority, you know, of what's proper and what's that. It's based on just how people feel. Does that make sense? So then in that means that as in that same way, the living entity then does the same thing in the material world. Right? The actual standard is, you know, how you say, the happiness of pure devotional service, right? Which is like an unlimited ocean. But they're dealing with, it would even be hard to say, fraction of a portion of a drop is attributed to Brahmananda, which is considered to be like an ocean compared to what Brahma, as the head of the universe, you know, appreciates, which we worked it out the other day.
It was a trillion.
A trillion times more than a king who is the sovereign emperor of the world with no, you know, problems, no enemies, you know, like Yudhishthira. And then you have, you know, the regular duffer, right? You know, like that, you know, down at the pub or something. So it means you'd have to go much smaller than nano, you know, using the, you know, nano, how you say, meterage there for measuring this. So that then being the standard, because then within that, everybody's practically nothing, but someone's got a little more of this nothing, and someone's got a little less of this nothing. So then we apply the curve on there, and then whoever's got a little bit more of nothing, then he's, you know, in ecstasy. And the guy who's got a little less of nothing, then he's kind of like feeling left out. Does that make sense? Right? So that's actually the happiness of this world. Right? So then the living entity, but that little bit he can get adjusted to, that at least it's something, it's happiness, he can relate to it. Right? Kind of makes a different perspective on happiness here. You start from there and go down instead of, you know, like that. Because otherwise you take here and it's good. And then there's beyond, and it goes beyond your, you know, like I was explaining, the New Yorker's view of the world, right? Like there's Manhattan Island. You know, so on the map, you look at the map, and then there's, you know, there's Manhattan. And then up here, then there's Chicago, here's LA, here's Tokyo, like that. You know, they just kind of, you know, there's the end of the island, somewhere out there, you know, on the other side of the Hudson, there's all those other places. So in the same way as we have our happiness here, and then, yeah, and then there's, you know, Brahma's happiness, Brahmananda, and that spiritual happiness. But, you know, ours is pretty good. But if you start the other way, then you can't even measure it. You know, you have to start getting into this, you know, atomic measurements, you know, numbers with, you know, to the, you know, the, how you say, to so many square above it, you know, it's like, you know, one nanometer to the, you know, 10,000th, you know, multiplication or something like that. Then you're starting to get down to how much happiness you're getting out of the place, you know. You know, rubbing two protons together and you got something, you know, like that. You know, wow, he's got a two proton happiness. You know, like that. Yeah, but you know, how many neutrons are there? You know? I've got six, he only has two. Like that, so. My isotope happiness is better than his isotopes. Right. Makes sense. Yeah, so. Like that. So. It becomes very minuscule, and this minusculeness we can adjust to, but the soul does not have a capacity for non-happiness. Right? It's ananda, so there is no element of non-happiness or misery in the living entity. So how is he supposed to relate to it? Right? A thermometer does not relate to, you know, how good lunch tastes. It can tell you how hot it is. Right? Does that make sense? You can't. So there's nothing to relate to. Therefore, misery disturbs the living entity so much. Does that make sense? It just can't relate to it. So the point is that if you take up material happiness because of the element of a nature, means the nature of energy, that it's always moving. So to that degree that it goes into the positive, it has to go into the negative, into the positive, into the negative. So that means on the material platform that there's going to be some positive, but that there's going to be negative. And the negative is always overwhelming to the positive because we cannot relate to the negative. Positive we can relate to, but negative we can't. Does that make sense? So that's why on the material platform, no matter what one says or does, it's always going to be a problem. It's just inherent. Does that make sense? So if one puts one's affection like that towards the material objects, this is what's going to happen. He's going to be miserable. So that means then if he uses that independence that the Lord gave him, right, to direct that towards Krishna, right, then he comes to the liberated platform where there is no misery, and he becomes actually situated in God consciousness. Does that make sense? So the whole thing is that he exists, so that rules out all these other kinds of weirdo philosophies, right? And then within that, he is servant of Krishna, and to that degree that he connects everything to Krishna, he'll be happy. To that degree he doesn't, he will suffer. Right? You may get a little happiness here and there, but you will suffer because the material energy is just designed like that. It's just the way it functions. Does that make sense? Yes?
How would you answer the doubt that someone said this comparative happiness seems exaggerated?
Exaggerated based on what?
One's thinking that it's not possible to experience happiness so many, so many greater times than.
Well, that's why we say is that one is that it means on the material platform you need better qualities of bodies to do that, but at the same time, as for spiritual happiness, you require a spiritual body to experience it. Means the beginning stages you can experience, but beyond that you can't. But the point is it's experience. It's experience in the consciousness, like that. Does that make sense? But the consciousness has a reaction on the body. Therefore, there's only so much of the spiritual that this body can handle. So up to prema, this body can handle. But beyond prema, then only the spiritual form can handle. That was probably another reason that the devotees would keep it down when it comes to ecstasy, right? when your body blowing up or something. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Yeah, it's just a matter of there's going to be that lack of trust that comes across. That's the basic line is that the conditioned living entity, the nature is lack of trust. Right? Because they're not able to gain what they want. You know, initially they'll start off generally having that element of trust, but very quickly they can understand that it's a problem in the material world. Just trusting because they have an idea of what material energy should be, but it's not. And so when it doesn't work that way, they get very upset, and so they're going to blame somebody. So their idea is not necessarily wrong. It's everybody else doesn't cooperate. So then they readjust their philosophy. So if they're a little bit more positive, you get your positivism and all these things, but if not, then you get your skepticism, like that, where, nothing's going to work out, and how do I even know I exist, and all these kind of things, right? As they're sitting there discussing if I exist, and then they wonder if they do, it's like stupid, but whatever it is. Is that okay? Okay, so then 2.2, the nature of the material energy. Chapter 3 of Sri Tattva Sutra. Achit Padartha Prakarana. So now, matter. Introduction by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Here someone may ask, in what form or with what potency does the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is beyond the modes of nature and whose form is eternal, and full of knowledge and bliss, apt to create the material universes. To answer this question, the author of the sutras begins this chapter, which gives the definition of the word achit, matter. Right? So then before was chit, this is achit. Before was, and the first was Ishvara. Right? So you always get these three. All philosophies deal with chit, achit, Ishvara. Right? Like that. That's your relationship. Now, within that established, then you have to practice that relationship. That's your avideya. And then there's going to be a result of that practice. That's your prayojana. But until these three are established, then there is not going to be any avideya or prayojana. Right? That's why you see, he first establishes the nature of the living entity's position. Then he establishes their natural, their qualities. Then from that, then if they use them materially, what they'll get, then spiritually. So you see the thing? One is the general definition of what they actually are. Then the material, one who's using that to act materially, then one who acts spiritually. Right? So then you get in the Dasamul, that'll be like that. The nature of the jiva, then the nature of the jiva who's misapplied his independence in the material, into material consciousness, and the jiva who's applying it properly in spiritual consciousness, in the liberated soul. Yes?
So, chit is jiva.
Chit and the jiva.
Chit is the jiva?
Chit is the jiva. Means?
It's a question.
It's a question. You want to know if chit is the jiva. Means any particular the jiva or?
Jiva tattva.
Is chit jiva tattva? Means is chit jiva tattva or is the term chit in this case referring to jiva tattva?
Yeah.
Because then you would say all chit is jiva tattva. So then it depends on your definition of jiva tattva. If you're meaning, the jivas meaning the atomic particles of the internal potency, then that's one definition. Then you can't say they are the chit, right? But if you're taking jiva meaning servant of the Lord, therefore all energy is servant of the Lord, then you could say chit is jiva.
So chit is all energy servant of the Lord?
Chit can mean the chit potency, meaning the chit shakti, which is the overall, the one energy, right? Or chit shakti can mean it's connected to the sambit potency, right, of the spiritual platform, which is your knowledge or your avideya principle, right? Expanding from that, then you get the jivas, which are also therefore chit, right? So the internal potency is chit. The specific aspect of the internal potency is chit, and the living entities expanding from that particular potency are therefore chit.
And what's achit?
Achit.
The material world?
It means you were just saying if you're taking one chit, then you're getting the jiva, right? Well, if you're taking a chit, then you're getting one jiva, right? Is that what you mean? Or you take meaning a chit, meaning there's three chits we've just described, so which chit we're describing. So you want to know which chit we're talking about. Or if you take any one of these chits, any chit, just a chit, could be this chit, that chit, so a chit.
Not an chit, a chit.
A chit. I see, meaning a chit as one word rather than as two words. Okay. Matter. Right, so chit means the living entities, which are spiritual. Achit means the material energy. And Ishvara means the Supreme Lord. So in that case, Ishvara includes the spiritual worlds. Right, him and his name, form, qualities, pastimes. Because that'll all happen within that. So all aspects of Godhead, other than the jiva and the material energy. Right, because that's the point in question. The problem isn't the spiritual world. The problem is the jiva is in the material world. Therefore, you look at there as chit and a chit. Okay? Because then if you look at it there, you can understand your opposite than the material energy. Yeah? Okay, Sutra 21. Okay, so how does the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is who's you know Satchidananda, how and who's beyond the modes, how does he create what? How does he create the material universes? How is that done? So now this answer comes up, Sutra 21. Matter is the illusory potency, Maya, which controls the modes of nature and creates a variety of forms and actions from the lowest to the highest. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Here the Supreme Lord's potency is named Maya. In the Svetasotara Upanishad 4.10 it is said, quote, although Maya, illusion, is false or temporary, the background of Maya is the supreme magician, the personality of Godhead, who is Maheshwara, the supreme controller. In the Svetasopara Upanishad 4.5, it is also said, a unborn man enjoys an unborn red, white, and black woman who bears many children like herself. Another unborn man first enjoys and then forsakes her. This is Upanishad. Translator's note. The unborn woman is the material nature. The colors red, white, and black are the modes of passion, goodness, and ignorance. The many children are the ingredients of the material universes. The firstborn man is the conditioned soul. The second unborn man is the soul who, after trying to enjoy matter, finally renounces the world and attains liberation. Okay. That's the Upanishad. In his Govinda Bhasya, commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains, quote, at the time of cosmic devastation, the three modes of nature become subtle and unmanifested. This is called tama, the unborn root of matter. At the time of cosmic creation, the modes of nature manifest a great variety of names and forms, beginning with pradhan and avyakta. In this way, forms of red and other colors are manifested. In the Shruti Shastra, it is said, Mahan avyakte liyate vyaktam akshare ksharam tamasi. At the time of cosmic devastation, the Mahatattva merges into the avyakta. The avyakta merges into the akshara, and the akshara merges into tama. Pradhan and avyakta. In the Isha Upanishad, Mantra 11, it is said, only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Yeah, so unless you can understand them both, if you only understand the spiritual, it's not necessarily that you'll get there, because the problem is if you can't distinguish between material and spiritual, you will use your, you know, by default, you will use your material perception and your material experiences on your on that spiritual, so-called spiritual understanding. And so what your actual application of Krishna consciousness will be material, right? So this basically comes up like your sahajya and like this. They don't worry about material studying knowledge. They just study about the Lord's pastimes, and they know so much about rasa and the bhavas and all this. So they're very educated on that side. But because they don't actually understand the workings of the material energy, they can't actually get there. You know, it's nice discussions. Prabhupada said it's great for, you know, bile secretion or something. That's, you know, everything moving. But the problem is after that, then nothing really works. Right? Does that make sense? So this is then the point. One needs to know both so one can distinguish. In the Shankhya Karika, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in these words. the quote, the root of matter does not change. From the root, seven transformations, beginning with Mahatattva, are manifested. From them, 16 transformations are manifested. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond the root of matter and its various transformations. Okay, so in other words, the Supreme Lord is there. From him then means you have matter. That doesn't change. So this tamas or this ignorance doesn't change. That always remains. But there are transformations from that, that then create all the different elements, right? Does that make sense? So all these different stages are going through until everything is manifest. But its root cause is ignorance, but Krishna is beyond that ignorance. The Supreme Personality of Godhead tells the demigod Brahma, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.34, O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Right. So so here Krishna is giving a very simple definition of Maya. Right? An illusion. Is that what is not in connection with him? That's all. It may be important, it may be necessary, it may be practical. It may be reality, it may be truth, it may be whatever you want to call it, but if it's not in connection with Krishna, it's illusion. That's all. Right? So that means Krishna's saying here is whatever appears to be of any value, if it's without relationship to me, has no reality. So anything you call valuable, if it's not you don't see it in connection with Krishna, then it actually has no meaning, it has no value, other than illusion. You will try to use this value that you're talking about and be practical and be result-oriented and be, you know, the go-getter, but you'll still end up with nothing. Does that make sense? You still end up with nothing. So, therefore, is whatever it is that you perceive, that you see is important, means it's in connection with Krishna. Right? Krishna is not making the point here that therefore whatever you call a value is not a reality, so it doesn't exist. No, he's saying is that it's an illusion if you don't see him in everything that you value. Right? Whatever you think is important, if you think Krishna is there, you can understand Krishna is there, then you're dealing with reality. But if you don't see Krishna, you're dealing with illusion. Right? So why is this important? Because by habit, we're so used to dealing with illusion from time immemorial, so we come in contact with actual reality this lifetime, then we're still going to have that habit of dealing with the material energy from the perspective of illusion. So unless this is pointed out, the tendency will be we're chanting Hare Krishna, so everything's fine. One sense, it is fine, because we're situated properly. But because of the element of never forget Krishna, always remember him. So that means, unless we're always chanting, that means we're going to be dealing with things that by our habit are going to make us forget. Therefore, what we see of value in that, that's what we have to see connected to Krishna, right? So it's what is you see of value, right? Someone else sees something else. An architect will look at this, he'll see one kind of value. Right, the aesthetics. The engineer is going to see structurally how it's good. He doesn't even care about aesthetics, possibly. So it's not a value to him. So he just sees the engineering aspect. The architect sees, you know, the practicalness or this and that. Someone else may be just into the ambience. So then they'll go by that. That's what's valuable to them. You make it look whatever you want, make it however you're nice. But if it doesn't have the right mood, then who cares? I'm saying someone else is just looking at the element of shelter, that, you know, there's no place to stay, here's a place to stay. Therefore, that's what's of value to them. They're not even worried about what's the mood, what does it look like, how, you know, nice it is. All they know is that it's a place to stay. They're not out on the street. You know what I'm saying? Someone else, this is where all their experiences are. They grew up here. This is home. So that's what's of value. It doesn't really matter what it looks like. You know, it's home. You understand? So the same building can have so many different value systems. So it doesn't matter, because Krishna is unlimited, so each thing has unlimited. But we are only perceptive of what is our values. right? The nature of our mind at present. So that's what then you have to see in connection to Krishna. You don't have to see everything. That's why these points are given, and they're seemingly more esoteric. And so they think, well, it's not practical. But actually, this esoteric aspect is what makes it actually practical. Because it should be practical at all times, all places, all circumstances, with all people. Therefore, it must very much just generally describe its usage and give some specific examples so that you can understand how to apply it in your situation. That makes sense? But that means one has to contemplate. That's why after studying the Shastra, then one must contemplate it, manana. If that's not there, you will never actually know how to apply the knowledge. Right? So it has to be contemplated. Right? Then you can understand how to apply it. Yes? So without contemplation. So just, you know, here's some simple rules. Everybody does the same thing. It may work, it may not work. Right? If, as long as your situation is close enough to the natural form that this principle would use, then it may work. But to that degree, as that expands and gets beyond that, it's a problem. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, okay, everyone lives in the temple. Okay? Then we have a nice paddhati for that. Right? You live in the temple, you just do service in the temple, whatever it is the temple authority says. The temple goes on nicely. The temple program goes on nicely. You know, your life basically goes on nicely. Okay? So it works. But now let us say there's people who can't move into the temple. They live out in the community. Right? Then there's a problem. We can't apply it there. Right? So it's either applied as too strict or it's too liberal. But it's not for each individual. Does that make sense? So because of that, and because of the temple the way it is, because even though the principles of it are perfect, and the program is perfect, it's not being applied with the understanding of the individual, being applied to the individual. Right? A community is a group of individuals, right, who follow the same, you know, how you say, common social understandings. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, if the temple devotee is not an individual who they are committed to following the temple life, without that understanding, then when they go out of the temple to the community, they can't see how they're the same person. So then they can't take the temple life with them. You understand? In the same way as a congregation can't understand how to apply the temple life in their scenario. Does that make sense? Right? So that's why then it's important to understand is that these principles are for application to the individual. So there's going to always be a slight difference. Right? Each soul is unique. Its conditioning, you know, means it's unique in the spiritual platform. The material world is the same old ho-hum stuff, but there's a lot of ho-hum variety here. There's 8,400,000 basic general varieties of ho-humness. Right? Maybe that's just sort of new one, you know. So that's so-a-hum, you know, ho-hum. Like that. Does that make sense? Right? So then, so you have to be able to see everything in connection to Krishna. So that ability, that's what the Shastras are trying to teach. Right? So now, as we saw before on the discussion on the Jiva, the less that one is attached to the material energy, the closer one is to liberation and closer one is to actual happiness. Right? And the more one's attached, then the farther one is away from that. Right? So that necessitates then you have to be able to see those things in connection to Krishna. Right? Then you'll be properly situated. If you can't see whatever it is you're dealing with, then it'll be a problem. Right? Right? And so, therefore, the more simple, the more just, you know, based on, you know, direct devotional activities, the lifestyle is, the nicer it is. Right? It's more direct, it's more obvious. But even if it's you're dealing with so much indirect, it still can be properly connected because Krishna is, whatever is of value in this world, it's still Krishna. So then one can deal with that broader range. Does it make sense? So that's the importance that's here. That's understood, then you can deal with actually all what is being said. Remember, this is from the Chaturshloki. You know, so this is actually establishing the final point of Sambandha here. The first point is that Krishna has made everything, entered into everything, at the same time as he's a separate person. Right? Then, having said that, since he's created and entered everything, so therefore if you don't see it in relationship to him, you're an illusion. Like that. Does that make sense? Very simple. Everything else is based upon this. It means your Chaturshloki is the points upon which the whole book will expand. Right? Same in the Gita. So you have these who then make everything work. So if that's there, then all the aspects of Krishna consciousness have meaning. Right. Does that make sense? In Sandilya's Bhakti Sutra 3.186, it is said, this potency of the Lord is called Maya, for it is material by nature. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.10, the Supreme Personality of Godhead declares, this material nature is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, and it is producing all moving and unmoving beings. By its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So the material nature is working under Krishna's direction and creating everything that's here. Right? And by what it does, everything happens. Right? But still, Krishna is the controller of it. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.14, the Supreme Personality of Godhead also declares, this divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered unto me can easily cross beyond it. Right? So the material energy is very big, it's very vast. It's one quarter of the cause of creation, right? And we're 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. So no comparison here. Right? If you have a match, it's obvious who's going to win. So therefore, then, because it's Krishna's energy, if you surrender to Krishna, then you can very easily overcome it because Krishna is the source of it. Right? And the jiva by nature is superior to it. But if the jiva is putting himself under the control of the material energy, then how he'll get out of it. Right? So by Krishna's grace, then one can cross. And then it becomes very easily. Because you're seeing Krishna in it, therefore, it's like Prabhupada gives the example of the snake. You have a poisonous snake, but if you remove its fangs, then even though it's poisonous, it can do you no harm. Right? It's not going to gum you to death or something, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. They never have a horror movie, right, where there's all these old men with no teeth and they're coming out and, you know, biting people and stuff. You know, they just don't do that, right? Like that. I guess they can make it into one of the, you know, keep putting those scary movies or something. The Kannada Sutra, 4th Adhyaya, 2nd Ahnika, it is said, reality is eternal. It was not created by anyone. Right? So reality is always there. It's eternal. So that means if what you call reality at some point falls apart or disappears, then what you're talking about is not reality. Because reality is eternal. In the Vaisheshika Sutra, it is said, the atom is the smallest unit of matter. It can never be divided. Right? So he's quoting from everywhere now. You know, like that. Kannada, right? Vaisheshika. Because there means, in other words, they have a philosophy. It's not that elements of it aren't correct. The problem is their conclusion of it, or the use of it, then goes wrong. Because they're all based on the Veda. Does that make sense? So for establishing certain points, they will be quoted as the authority, because like if you're dealing with atoms, no one gets into atoms any more than the Vaisheshika. Does that make sense? So therefore, in certain things, then is very good. So he'll be quoted, just like on Jaimini. So many times he'll be quoted to defeat these other philosophies, because he has thought about it, you know, and then he is done. He has a superior approach. Main thing is just God is left out, you know, like that. That makes sense. Yeah. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3.11.1.2 Sri Maitreya declares, the material manifestation's ultimate particle, which is indivisible and not formed into a body, is called the atom. It exists always as an invisible entity, even after the dissolution of all forms. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Atoms are the ultimate state of the manifest universe. When they stay in their own forms without forming different bodies, they are called the unlimited oneness. There are certainly different bodies and physical forms, but the atoms themselves form the complete manifestation. Right. So at this point, you know, there won't be much difference between what we're saying and the quantum physics. The difference is they don't know that there's also the source of all this, you know, how it actually works. Make sense? You know, so this atomic theory is a Vedic concept. But because going back to Godhead is the real purpose of human life, right? You only deal with it as much as is necessary. Otherwise, you think the forms are everything. But the point is no, the atoms are everything. So besides the forms here, there's more atoms than that, and that actually makes up the whole creation. So all the atoms put together, that's your creation. So within that, then some of those atoms have been put together into forms according to how much is necessary for the living entities. That's why this idea is that, oh, we're going to run out of resources. You're not going to run out of resources because there's unlimited atoms. So there's always going to be resources. Does that make sense? So whatever is there, this transforms into that. It doesn't matter. The atoms remain the same. Right? So that way, then, it also is just another way of breaking down one's attachment that the form is so important. But then the problem is just everything's atoms, so therefore everything comes from that. But their mistake then, having said all this, is that therefore life comes from the atoms. You know, the soul comes from there. Therefore, then that's where they made the mistake. So then you throw it all out. That makes sense. Yes.
Is there an absolute smallest unit, or is it?
Yeah, no, it's the atom. That's what the Bhagavatam said. That's there. Krishna's smaller than the smallest. So he's smaller than the atom, he's smaller than the soul. Same time, he's bigger than the biggest. So, like that. So, but that's Krishna. But within the material sphere, the atom is as small as it gets. You know, within the spiritual sphere, you know, of energy, then the jiva is as small as you get. But the point is if the jiva can be small, that concept comes from Krishna, who therefore is the smallest. Whatever quality we have, Krishna has more of that quality. So if we have a quality of smallness, he has more quality of smallness. So he can be smaller. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah. So it's actually, if you want, pays attention, there's so much in our philosophy. We just kind of like, you know, it means we're keeping it, we're applying the KISS formula. But, you know, one has to be careful, because if you're developing sophistication in illusion and ignorance, you have to develop it in spiritual. Vidyam cha vidyam, right? The two must be together, the vidya and avidya. Right? If they're not studied together, then you're going to have a problem. If it's only spiritual, you won't actually know how to deal with the material, so you won't know how to get out. You'd be basically deal with the material without the spiritual, then you're already there. You don't have to worry about getting conditioned, you already are. You understand? So they must be used together. Then it works. Yes? So the science of getting the milk and the mudi on the spoon into your mouth, that science must be cultivated with the concept that understanding that this is Krishna Prasad. Okay? Because otherwise, if you only know it's Krishna Prasad, you don't know how to get it in your mouth, then how are you going to get the benefit? And if you only know how to get it in your mouth, but you don't know it's Prasad, then you'll only be dealing with Agyata Sukriti. That's why you must know both together. Yes? Reasonable?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Vrindavani. Essential nature and character are incomplete. Jiva is inherently endowed with an atom of bliss, which is called as Brahmananda. Compared with the bliss of devotional service, bhakti, to Bhagavan.